So Boston gets a new art czar, and next week the city gets its newest piece of public art, inspired by this.
Stop it! Stop it, you devils! Yes, yes, I did it! It's there, under the floor! Oh, stop it! It is the beating of his hideous heart!
That is, of course, the shiver-inducing conclusion of Edgar Allan Poe's classic story, The Telltale Heart. The Gothic masterpiece was first published in 1843 in the inaugural issue of the Boston magazine The Pioneer, which was edited by James Russell Lowell, one of the city's great literary figures. Which is rather interesting because even though Poe was born in Boston, he had a very tumultuous relationship with the city's literati. Boston, in turn, basically told Poe, okay, Anthony, I can't help this, but I'm going to do this pun, nevermore, and didn't embrace him as it has other legendary wordsmiths such as Emerson, Thoreau, or Longfellow.
Well, you did that well, Magna. But all of this is about to change because the Edgar Allan Poe Foundation of Boston will unveil a new statue honoring the writer near Boston Common on October 5th.
Paul Lewis is chairman of the Poe Foundation, and we talked to him when the group first announced the statue's dramatic design. Lewis is also a professor of English at Boston College, and he began by telling us about why Poe is typically associated with cities such as Baltimore rather than his birthplace of Boston.
Poe lived in several cities over the course of his lifetime, Boston among them, and Boston is most closely associated with his mother's family, because his grandmother and mother both came here from England in the 1790s to perform in the Boston Theater.
He was born in 1809. How long did he end up staying in Boston?
At that time, it's not exactly known. It's not as though there was a big announcement in the local paper saying Poe family leaves Boston. But we think they were here for somewhere between 2 and 5 months, and that Poe returned later in his life and lived here for 5 or 6 months. So we can say accurately, I think, that he was in Boston for maybe a bit less than a year over the course of his life.
Over the course of his life. Okay, so actually not that long. And yet, on the other hand, it seems that his time in Boston, though short, was pretty formative in terms of his writing and his attitudes about literature as well.
That's absolutely true. It's worth pointing out that Poe returned to Boston after dropping out of the University of Virginia in 1827. He was 18 years old. And at that time, he really started his career as a writer. He published his first book here, Tamerlane and Other Poems. And he would publish major works here throughout his career. So we like to say that he published his first, his most famous short story, and his last works here in Boston.
Okay. But the thing about Poe, which I think is most interesting regarding his relationship to the city of Boston, is that he did a lot of pretty serious literary criticism. And is that while he was here?
So, no. I mean, when Poe was here in the 1820s, he was just starting out. He wasn't really a professional writer. After he gets out of the army, by the way, he enlists at Castle Island at Fort Independence. He begins a career as a writer, and he gets jobs editing and co-editing magazines in places like Richmond and Baltimore and Philadelphia and New York eventually. And it's in the course of that career, which includes a great deal of book reviewing, that Poe develops the ideas that he would sort of bring to his own craft as a writer. And many of those ideas were developed in opposition to what he took to be the style and intent of writers here in Boston.
Did he have a nickname due to the style and vehemence of his literary criticism?
Yes, he did. He was called the Tomahawk Man.
But he wasn't, I mean, in his when he was doing his tomahawk-like reviews and criticisms, he was going after some of the giants of not only the Boston literary scene, but the American literary firmament. I mean, he didn't have the kindest words for, can correct me if I'm wrong, Emerson and Longfellow in particular?
He referred to the so-called poetry of the so-called transcendentalists.
So-called, so-called, so-called.
Exactly. He said that Emerson indulged in mysticism for mysticism's sake, something my students probably would agree with. And he went after Longfellow over and over again throughout his career as a literary reviewer and theorist.
He called it his little Longfellow war?
Yes, he did. And he criticized Longfellow for writing very didactic poetry, poetry that wasn't really that good and especially not likely to endure. And that's a prediction that turned out to be pretty much true.
Huh. Do we have the works of the likes of Emerson and Longfellow to thank for what who Poe became? Because, I mean, it seems as if so much of the writing that, that he became famous for was a direct response to the romanticism of the 19th century.
Yeah, absolutely. So Poe is coming out of traditions in Europe and in England that are popular, that are Gothic fiction. And Poe becomes the most important adapter and extender of what Gothic fiction can do. In the process of exploring Gothic horror and mystery, he creates the detective tale. And really, Arthur Conan Doyle gives Poe credit for having invented Sherlock Holmes, essentially, and all of the conventions that go into detective writing. Yeah. So I just want to say that in a positive way, you know, whatever Poe's quarrel was with his contemporaries, Boston needs to recognize and celebrate Edgar Allan Poe because he was an immensely positive force in the development of world literature and popular culture. And everywhere else in the world, he is celebrated. So we need to bring him home to Boston.
Okay, so we're going to talk in a minute about exactly how that's being done with this new statue. But there's one more point in Poe's Little Longfellow War that I do want to talk about, because also he accused Longfellow of plagiarism.
Yes, over and again. He called Longfellow the great mogul of the imitators. He said he was the highest order literary thief. He actually provided detailed evidence for the case against Longfellow. He prosecuted Longfellow in a way that they wish they could do on Law and Order. And in fact, interestingly, Longfellow's most recent biographer has looked at this argument back and forth and said, you know what? Longfellow's head was so full of other people's writing as a professor of modern languages at Harvard, he couldn't avoid doing exactly the sort of thing that Poe said he did. So Poe was right. He was.
So let me ask you, is that one of the reasons why it doesn't seem as if Boston's really taken a shine to Poe, even though he was born here?
I think maybe. I mean, in the middle of the 1840s, Poe returned to Boston to give a lecture at the Boston Lyceum. It was the most controversial literary lecture given in America before the Civil War. After that talk, he was savaged in the Boston press, and out of it maybe did linger a good deal of kind of acrimony towards Poe. But get over it. You know, it's time for Boston to embrace the writer who may well be the most influential literary figure ever born in the city.
So tell us about this new statue. I mean, we've seen a model of it has been unveiled, and I have to say it's very exciting. It's quite an eye-catching thing.
It's going to be located between the Frog Pond. Boston was called Frog Pondium by Poe, not in the most gentle way, and the place where we think he was probably born, the house his parents were living in a few months before he was born. And it shows him walking away from the Frog Pond. His left hand is dismissing the Frog Pondians behind him, and he's striding forward carrying a suitcase. Falling out of the back of the suitcase, there's this pile of books and papers, on the top of which is an anatomically correct human heart. And that has a special Boston relevance, too, given the story.
Okay.
And in front is an oversized raven. And the idea is Poe's returning to Boston with a life of literary achievement that should be celebrated, whatever the Frog Pondians might have thought at the time.
And so why do you think it has actually taken so long for some kind of official honor to be given to, you know, one of the city's, I guess, most important literary figures, even if he didn't actually live here for all that long?
It's not as though people haven't been trying for a while. Plaques have been put up. Alleys have been named after Poe. The plaques have gone missing. The street names changed. And that's why at this point we need a permanent memorial that will just sort of put this right at the heart of literary Boston.
Yeah.
I'd like to say one thing about this heart of literary Boston thing, too, because it's important. The area around this where this statue is going, you know, a mile in any direction, is probably the most important literary site in the development of American literature before the Civil War. And the Poe statue is going to help establish that fact and make it present for people in a way that we haven't maybe done so much before.
Right. What do you think Edgar Allan Poe would make of this triumphant return to Boston? And I was going to ask you if he ever did actually want to come back to the city that he had such a fractious relationship with.
Well, definitely he did. He writes to his mother-in-law just shortly before his death that he needs to move to someplace near Annie, and that was Annie Richmond, who was living in Lowell at the time. Whether he would have done that, I don't know. And what he would have made of the statue is, of course, also very unpredictable. But I think he would have liked the spirit of it, which was basically to say, hey, Frog Pondians, I made it into the 21st century. What are you up to these days?
Well, Paul Lewis is a professor of English at Boston College and chair of the Edgar Allan Poe Foundation. of Boston. Paul Lewis, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And the city's new statue honoring Edgar Allan Poe will be unveiled next Sunday near Boston Common.
And I guess we should say welcome back, Edgar Allan Poe. Stay with us, cartoonist Roz Chast, on the challenge and the humor of caring for her parents at the end of their lives. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.